All right, tonight we're in Revelation chapter 17. Revelation 17. I got it on. Revelation 17. Interesting chapter, lots of heavy stuff in it, so lots for us to discuss and plow through tonight. All right. Start out with the little diagram here, and there's probably going to be controversy, but that's all right. That's, you know, there's differences of opinion. But as you look at this, chapter 17, I've put over here at the first half of the tribulation period, there's differences of opinion, but I think that the overall census of what we're going to be looking at here tonight seems to fit there better than it does anywhere else. All right, so we're going to be looking at the mystery Babylon, the Great. All right, and so as we work our way through, starting with just a little bit of an introduction, some introductory comments here. First of all, the chapter is not in chronological order. That's an important thing for us to remember because if you just read through the book of Revelation thinking it's chronologically all in line, then you get really confused. But realizing that it's not, it kind of covers a lot of the information. As far as I can tell, this chapter covers a major part of the first half of the tribulation and maybe some of the other part too. But many Bible teachers think that Revelation 17 describes the fall of religious Babylon, and Revelation 18 describes the fall of economic Babylon. A couple of those commentators were Ryrie and Walvoord for two that take that position. And I can see where they're coming from, so we'll see what happens here. The word whore that we'll be reading in the verse 1 is translated harlot in other places. This immoral woman represents an apostate religion. It's not talking about a person, it's the religion. And many terms in this chapter are figurative, and the fornication refers to uniting with false religions. The woman is not human, but a false religion. And her fine clothing pictures prosperity. The drunken with blood of the saints pictures that she killed the God's people. She was killing the martyrs. All right, so these are just some introductory comments to help us to be able to get our feet on the ground as we dig into this next section here. Verses 1 to 6 is where we're going to start, first of all. She sits on many waters. Look at verse number 1. All right, and there came one of the seven angels which had the seven vials. All right, now remember, one of the beasts of heaven, one of the living creatures, gave the seven vials to seven angels. And one of those angels came and spoke with John. All right, and he talked with me, saying, Come hither, and I will show thee the judgment of the great whore which sitteth upon many waters. All right, now, as you look at this, she's sitting on many waters, and it indicates that she has international influence. Look down at verse number 15, and it defines the waters for us. That's very helpful. Verse number 15, it says, "And he saith unto me, the waters which thou sawest, where the whore sitteth, are peoples and multitudes and nations and tongues." All right, so there's a lot of individuals here that are being dealt with here. So it's an international thing. She's dealing with lots of peoples, lots of nations, and she's sitting on these waters. So she's overseeing these peoples and nations. All of these things. All right, and she interacts with political leaders as an unholy alliance between the apostate religion and the government. It's almost like church and state are working together here in a sense, but she's representing the religious side of it, the apostate religion, and working with the government leaders of these nations. And so, again, this seems like it's probably taking place in the first half of the tribulation. And that was in verse number 2, so I better keep reading. "With whom the kings of the earth have committed fornication." Remember, that's picturesque here of interacting intimately with this religious religion. "And the inhabitants of the earth have been made drunk with the wine of her fornication." All right, so they are overwhelmed by this religious system that is taking place here. And then she is in a solitary place sitting in on a scarlet beast in verse number 3. So he carried me away in the spirit into the wilderness. All right, the word wilderness refers to a solitary place, a desert area type of a place. John's over there in this wilderness, and I saw a woman sitting upon a scarlet colored beast, full of names of blasphemy, having 7 heads and 10 horns. All right, so this beast is full of names of blasphemy. Again, there's pictures here. This is not a literal beast, but it's some kind of a system that is full of blasphemy, and it has 7 heads and 10 horns. So here's some things for us to pull apart. The beast was full of blasphemous names and had these 7 heads and 10 horns. We saw back in the similar thing back in chapter 13, verse number 1. Let me just take a look at that and read that to us. 13:1 says, "And I stood upon the sand of the sea and saw a beast rise out of the sea, having 7 heads and 10 horns. And upon his horns, 10 crowns, and upon his heads, the name of blasphemy." All right, so this beast was full of blasphemous names, and this the 7 heads and the 10 horns were there. These seem to be the Antichrist and his allies. All right, so this is picturing that she's sitting upon. So this woman, this harlot, this religious leader, or the picturing the religious system, is sitting upon the beast. So they're working together here, and the Antichrist and this woman are working together. And the woman was very wealthy, as indicated by her dress. See in verse number 4 here. And the woman was arrayed in purple and scarlet color, decked with gold and precious stones and pearls, and having a golden cup in her hand full of abominations and filthiness of her fornication. Now, it's interesting. Some speculate that her golden cup was a golden chalice used in the Roman Mass. It's a possibility. All right? There's a lot of things here pointing in the direction, and I don't know that we can dogmatically say, but there's a lot of indication, and a lot of people believe that this woman was the Catholic Church, the Roman Catholic Church. There seems a lot of indication in that way. Very powerful, very influential, very dominant over the nations that were around, much like we saw back in the Dark Ages when the Roman Church was basically in charge of the world in a lot of ways, and governing over that. So she's having this great influence on the government leaders that were taking place during this time. And so there seems to be all these little things that are pointing toward that direction. Okay? And then verse number 5, her descriptive name is on her forehead. Verse number 5, "And upon her forehead was the name written, Mystery Babylon the Great, the mother of harlots and the abominations of the earth." What a name. Right? But it describes her of what she was like, who she was. The word abominations there speaks of things pertaining to idolatry. All right? So she is introducing idolatry. And remember, this is after the rapture. All the true Christians are gone, except those that have been saved during the tribulation period. But the religious system here is certainly not a biblical religious system. All right? Ryrie states that though the famous city of Babylon was on the Euphrates River, the name here seems to be symbolic reference to Rome. And we see that in verse number 9 and also in 1 Peter 5:13. Down in verse number 9 here, we'll be getting to that in a few moments, but it says in here is the mind which has wisdom, the 7 heads are the 7 mountains on which the woman sitteth. We'll talk about that in a few minutes, so I won't jump ahead of myself. All right, and then she is responsible for killing the saints and the martyrs. All right, in verse number 6, "And I saw the woman drunken with the blood of the saints and with the blood of the martyrs of Jesus. And when I saw her, I wondered with great admiration." Now, I want to stop on that phrase for a moment here. Certainly, this is true of the Catholic Church during the Inquisition. However, it is also true of Muslims and others who persecute Christians. So to just say that it's just the Catholics that are persecuting, no, there's a lot of people that persecute the Christians. And we see, in fact, today probably more of the Muslim areas were persecuting the Christians than maybe the Catholic Church.
But yep. It's all got to be taken in context.
Yes.
When you read all the things, the only one that really stands today is the Roman Catholic Church. It sits on seven hills. Mm. The Vatican is its own city.
Yeah.
They have the richest of that they ever did.
No, I'm not denying that, but I'm just saying
I'm
that.
I'm saying it fits the criteria yes. quite well.
But at the same time, there's going to have to be something about the dominance of the Roman Church, if it is the Roman Church that is there, that's going to be able to dominate even the Muslims, to be able to convince them in their religious thing. It seems to be some, maybe even a conglomerate of Catholicism mixed in with other things.
They tried to do it today, yeah. By combining all religions.
Yes. So this ecumenical idea of bringing it all together. So that's probably what's going to happen here, is they're going to bring it all together. When John saw her, he wondered. And the word wonder there means to marvel. The word admiration is a noun form of the verb that translated wondered. He wondered with great wonder. So take a look at that verse again. So make sure you make a note of this, because it looks like we think of the word admiration in a different light. So we're looking there at verse number 6. And he says there, when I saw her, I wondered with great admiration. So it wasn't like he was admiring. He was wondering with great wonder. I can't figure this out. This is weird. I don't understand. Or it's awesome, or it's amazing. That's the idea of here. So one of them's a noun, one of them's a verb. So just need to make sure we catch that. The angel asked John why he wondered and said that he would explain this mystery. Look at verse number 7. And the angel said unto me, wherefore didst thou marvel? I will tell thee the mystery of the woman and of the beast that carrieth her, which hath the seven heads and 10 horns. All right, so that's good. The angel says, I'll explain this to you. So he's about to tell us that. Then we see the religious Babylon here detailed in verses 8 to 15. The angel gives John the details about this, the beast, first of all. Verse number 8, and the beast that thou sawest was and is not, and shall ascend out of the bottomless pit, and go unto perdition. And they that dwell on the earth shall wonder, whose names are not written in the book of life from the foundation of the world, when they behold the beast that was and is not, and yet is. All right, so here he's describing the beast, and he says that the beast, we believe, is the Antichrist and his revived empire. We saw that in verse 8. And then the unbelievers will marvel and admire him. All right, so they're going to be a marvel at him. They're going to be amazed and marvel over him and admire him. And his seven heads, maybe seven mountains. In verse number 9, we see that. Verse number 9, and there is a mind which has wisdom. The seven heads are seven mountains on which the woman sits. All right, so the seven mountains. And two comments on this. John Eckab thinks that these heads are past empires coming and the coming EU, right, the European Union. Especially, evidently, he thinks that the heads and the kings in verse 10 are the same. In his booklet there, he calls them the heads, and yet he's describing the kings. So he must believe that they're both, the two of them are the same there. And they may be. And Ryrie states that though Rome is built on more than seven hills, it has been known as a legendary city of seven hills, indicating that the center of the Antichrist power will be in Rome. And there's probably, strong truth to that. All right? A lot of people believe that. It seems to be leaning that direction. In addition, there are seven kings. Verse number 10. All right? Verse number 10. And there are seven kings. Five are fallen. One is, and the other is not yet come. And when he cometh, he will continue a short space. And the beast that was and is not, even he is the eighth, and is of the seven, and goeth unto perdition. All right, so I read 8 as well, because they kind of, or the, sorry, the next 11 as well, because they kind of go together. So here, the five are past. All right, so there's five of these kings that are history kings. It's already gone past in the history. And then there's, he says, one is present. This is probably in John's day. One is yet future. Perhaps this revived Roman Empire he's speaking of here. So these are the kings that he's speaking of. And then as we see here that in verse 11, the beast is the eighth king, yet part of the seven.
Could there be past empires?
What's that?
You know, where the seven kings are fallen and one. Could there be past empires, like the Babylonian Empire?
Yeah, well, the first five.
Persian Empire. And,
yeah, yeah, the first five would be. Yeah, the past. That's why I put it on the screen there, that they're the past. And then one was the present in John's day, and then one was future, probably the revised Roman Empire. All right, so these are the kings there. Okay? And then in verse number 12, we see that the 10 horns which thou sawest are 10 kings, which have received no kingdom as yet, but receive power as kings 1 hour with the beast. All right, so there's 10 kings, or 10 horns are the 10 kings, and they will reign briefly with him. Wolbert claims that these 10 kings will not rule in succession, but simultaneously. They will reign together with the beast for a short time before the world empire is established. All right, so that's one. Looking at it, Ryrie adds to that. He says the 10 nations are, it's a 10 nation federation will form in the West and will be headed by the Antichrist. And then Oliver B. Green states that the kingdoms of the earth are not the same as the kings, the kings of the earth are not the same as the kings of verse 12. The 10 kings will have to do only with the Roman Empire, the civil power of the day. But the kings of the earth signify the whole world. So that's his take on that. So he mentions the kings of the earth back up in verse 1 or 2. 2, I think it was. So he mentions the kings of the whole earth. And so that's... So there's differences of opinions on some of these things that are taking place here, but these 10 kings are 10 horns are 10 kings, probably working together, working with the Antichrist, and in harmony. Now, it's all during this whole time is this the woman, the religious Babylon, probably the Catholic Church, if we assume, is working with them and over them and through them and all of that. During this time, so that would have been during the first half of the tribulation period. They will be unified and support the Antichrist in verse number 13, and have one mind, and shall have and shall give their power and strength unto the beast. So all these kings are working together. They're supporting the beast. They're supporting the Antichrist and all that he's doing. And the woman is working out with them. It's all we see. It's all coming together as a harmonious world domination, and something that will probably take place right after the rapture, and the world is in chaos, and the Antichrist steps in, brings peace and calmness, and then 10 nations come together, and they join with them, and the Mother Church comes on with them, and they all work together in harmony, trying to bring everything back into peace and harmony again. That seems to be the picture, at least as I take it. And these powers will make war with the Lamb in verse number 14. And these will make war with the Lamb, and the Lamb shall overcome them. For he is Lord of lords and King of kings, and they that are with him are called chosen and faithful. Right now, exactly when that takes place, it doesn't tell us here, but he says that it will happen. He will overcome them, and those that are with him are likely the saints. You know, he mentions here those that are faithful. Sorry?
Wouldn't that be the second coming?
You're talking about at the end of the tribulation?
That's right.
Well, it seems like it. But, you know, again, if that's the case, then all this stuff doesn't kind of fit together very well. All right? So it's not chronological. He's just emphasizing some information here. The waters represent the peoples of the world. We saw that earlier as we took a peek look at at verse 15 already. So as you look at this, before we turn the page here, and you look at this situation here, these 10 kings are working together. Now, if this wasn't in the first of the tribulation, then we got to ask ourselves, well, when is this? When all these people are working with him? Because in the middle of the tribulation is when the Antichrist steps up and says, no more of this religious stuff, everybody worship me, and everybody, you know, he becomes the world dictator then, and he's not taking advice from anybody. So it really seems like it has to be in the first part when he's working together with the religious things. You got to
say. He has full control of everything.
At the middle of the trip. Yeah, I know.
He's full glory.
Yes.
And he goes till the end, right?
Yes.
So he still has his power to the end. And he's part of this church, right? He's part of this conglomerate.
Well, he is at the beginning.
The Antichrist, and they're the three.
Well,
the new Roman Empire that's going to come, that's going to be part of the ten.
But what I'm saying is the woman and if it's the Catholic Church and all of that.
Are part of the Roman Empire. They go hand in hand with the Antichrist.
Yes, but are they? But when he steps up and becomes the king of the world, I'm not sure how that's going to go. Oh, maybe. I don't know. I guess we'll watch it from heaven and see what happens when that day comes. All right, the religious Babylon is destroyed. Verse number 12. All right, the ten horns and the ten kings in verse 12 that will hate the religious Babylon and destroy her in verse number 16. This is likely in the middle of the tribulation, according to Ryrie. Verse number 16, and the ten horns which thou sawest upon the beast, these shall hate the whore and shall make her desolate, and the nations desolate and naked, and eat her flesh and burn her with fire. So this whore, this religious woman, she's going to be destroyed. So she's not going to be working hand in hand with him all the way to the end. So she's going to be destroyed, probably in the middle of the tribulation when he takes over. All right, and God places this in their hearts to fulfill his will. Very interesting to see how God does this. Look at 17. For God has put in their hearts to fulfill his will and to agree and to give their kingdoms to the beast until the words of God shall be fulfilled. So God's putting it in the hearts of these evil people that are against him to do what's right. Putting it in their hearts to do what's right, even though it wasn't what they were choosing to do in their own will. They were doing what God wanted them to do. And God was just using them and working through them. So that's a blessing that it worked out like that. The woman is the great city that has royal power over the world. Verse number 18. And the woman which thou sawest is that great city. All right, speaking of Babylon or Rome, the case may be, reigneth over the kings of the earth. All right, so she has got power. And again, it seems to be going back and forth in some of this, what he's speaking of here, because it doesn't seem to be chronological even in the chapter. But he's speaking of this woman again, very powerful, very influential, and putting forth her power over the kings of the earth. But then we see that she was destroyed there in verse 16. And all of her glory and her pomp was destroyed, and her flesh was she was burned with fire. And so there's a great destruction there of the Babylonian, this woman.
Is
all right.
That in chapter 18, the destruction?
Yes, chapter 18 then we said was probably dealing with the destruction of the political side of it. In 17 he deals more with the religious side of it, and verse number 18 deals more with the political side of the destruction. Okay, and then some applications here. The ecumenical movement today is of the devil. There's no question about that, and it is preparing people for the harlot religion of the tribulation. They're bringing them together, bringing in the harmony, and all this idea that we need to get together and work together. It's amazing how many churches have that thinking in their minds that that's a good idea. They just, you know, I don't know how any church that truly believes the gospel could believe that. because bringing in people that don't believe the gospel, how in the world can you do that? It just doesn't make any sense. And so years ago, this is many, many years ago, probably we'd only been here for about a year or so, and I was invited to a pastor's meeting that was, I think it was, might have even been headed up at the Baptist Union Church. And I said, well, all right, thanks for the invitation. Who's going to be there? Oh, everybody. I said, well, who do you mean by everybody? Well, and he started naming them off, the Catholics and the Anglicans. I said, well, I don't really have anything in common with any of them, so I don't think I'll be there. And, you know, so it's hard to figure out, you know, why would they want to get together with all these guys that don't even believe the same gospel that they claim to believe? And yet that's happening all around us. And the harlot will prevent truth and hate true Christians. Sorry, not prevent, pervert truth. She will pervert the truth and hate the true Christians. And we see that certainly, you know, we saw that back in the Inquisition, and we see that in other religious circles as well today. And the Antichrist will use the harlot for 3.5 years and then turn her over and turn on her and destroy her. So it appears, at least as I see it here, that the Antichrist is going to be using the Catholic Church for his advantage, or this, if it's not the Catholic Church, but I mean, the word Catholic means universal. So, I mean, as Joe mentioned a moment ago, there's all the ecumenical idea of it. So this ecumenical apostate church will be used by the Antichrist to further his desires during that first half. And then he's going to destroy her and set himself up as God and king. And then we must separate from the ecumenical movement, and we must take a biblical stand on doctrine. We need to understand what we believe and why. Not to be mean, not to be unkind, but we need to take a stand and a stand for what is right, and not budge on that. And then we must believe and preach the gospel of Jesus Christ. Very important that we stand for the truth and we believe and preach the gospel.